Hey, Doc Brian. My name's Amanda from Philadelphia.
And this is Jacob from Basel.
This is Carol from Chicago.
And I just had a question for you, Doc Brian.
Everybody, Doc Brian here, and welcome to Doc Talks. We talk about people's troubles, trials, tribulations, and hopefully triumphs in life. Today, we're broadcasting from LifeWord Studios. They produce Christian content in over 150 languages to 127 countries with a potential listening audience of 2 billion people. Today, we have something a little different. I've had some of you call in questions to our show. Of course, you can leave us a message or a text at 501-313-0833. That's 501-313-0833. So today, we're going to answer your questions that you've called in. And so we thank you for doing that. Let's go to our first question here.
Hi, my name is Lauren from Greenbrier, Arkansas. I was wondering if someone had been on antidepressants and anti-anxiety medication for over 10 years, how hard would it be to completely come off and live an unquote normal life?
Well, Lord, we thank you for your question. Now, I'm not supposed to give opinions about medication, but I will say this. Depending on the cause of the anxiety and the depression, it may be you may be able to come off of those medications as a stair step down. Now, the American Board of Psychology says that the best way to treat mental health is a combination between medication and therapy. And the medication should be an adjunct until you're able to get through therapy and be able to begin the healing process for those things. Now, it's important to remember that some types of depression and anxiety come with a chemical standpoint. So it may be that your psychiatrist would keep you on medication for potentially the rest of your life. But again, that's a medical question. I would refer you to your psychiatrist. But thank you for your call.
Hey, Dr. Brian, this is Jacob from Batesville. I just wanted to ask, I think it's pretty commonly known that there are a lot of different things that are overprescribed, you know, whatever the case may be, different mental conditions, so on and so forth. And I was just wondering your opinion. How much of that is actually spiritual warfare at play, and how much of that is legitimate, in your opinion, do you think is legitimate medical conditions? And where do we, how do we find the balance to walk that line of dealing with spiritual warfare while also dealing with the physical afflictions as well? Thank you.
Jacob, you asked a very hard question because there's not just one answer. So to begin with, overprescribed medications, I do believe that there are instances where medication is overprescribed for a period of time. And it may be that a lot of people, when they look at medications, they take what is known as their cocktail. That's two or three medications that they have to take to manage those certain side effects. As Lauren mentioned in her call, could you get off of those at a particular time? And the question may be yes, it may be no. But as far as this line between mental health issues and spiritual conditions, I believe that your spiritual life plays a huge aspect in your mental health. We can see that all throughout Scripture. If you look at David in the Psalms, I believe that David was bipolar. We see him in his highest of highs and his lowest of lows, and he could switch back and forth. I do believe that any medical health mental health condition is a medical condition. If you were, let's say you were suicidal and you went to the hospital, they're going to clear you medically before they admit you into any type of program to make sure that there aren't things like a thyroid issue or chemical imbalances or, you know, in some cases, brain tumors to see exactly what's going on there. So when we think about the balance of spiritual warfare and the physical afflictions, I would say that they are both at work there. Hopefully that answered your question just a little bit. We'll go to the next caller here.
Hey, Doc, this is Brian. Trying to find some coping mechanisms for anxiety, specifically with social situations with large crowds. I would appreciate any guidance on this topic. Thank you very much.
So coping mechanisms. Now, there's a wide variety of things that you can do, but specifically here to this question, dealing with social situations being in large crowds. Typically, when we look at that particular anxiety, it is due to there being some kind of stress-related, maybe PTSD, with military or police being in large rooms where they feel like they don't have control. So coping mechanisms, the best thing to cope is to make sure that you are in a position of where you feel safe. If you're at a restaurant and you notice that some people refuse to sit where their back is to the door, that may be a coping mechanism for someone. If they are in a situation of maybe they're at church and there's a large crowd where they make sure that there's plenty of distance between them and the other people. As far as looking at to dealing with anxiety specifically, let's say that you get to the point of where you're having an anxiety attack. There are a couple of different things you can do. You can look at grounding techniques where you look to see something, you feel to touch something, and you ground yourself in that moment, realizing that you are safe, that you are in a position of this anxiety not taking over. You can do box breathing. Where you breathe in for 5 seconds, you hold it for 5 seconds, and you breathe out for 5 seconds, and then you rest for 5 seconds. And that way it kind of resets your parasympathetic nerve system so that you can be able to go on. Probably one of the most recommended things to do is when that anxiety comes is to keep some kind of sour piece of candy that you can pop in your mouth, and the sourness will reset your way of thinking because your brain is then focused on the sour and not actually what is happening in real time. Appreciate your call in. Hopefully that helps.
Hey, Dr. Bryant, love the show. Cletus here, Arkansas. Long time listener, first time caller. Let me tell you, it's truly an honor, sir, to be on the show. I wanted to know, like, what is your favorite Christian artist? Like, mine's Kenny Chesney, but if you could, get back to me. Like I said, love the show. Hope to hear from you, bud.
Well, Cletus, I did not know that Kenny Chesney was a Christian artist. That's news to me, but thank you for calling in. My favorite Christian artist, I lean more into the Southern gospel of people like the Gaither Vocal Band, Greater Vision. I love the old time Cathedrals Quartet. So that would be my favorite Christian artist. Again, thank you for your call.
Hi, Doc Brian. My name is Charlotte, and my girlfriends and I learned about you on TikTok, and we are so disappointed that you're not on it anymore. We want you back.
Well, Charlotte, thank you for your call. I am on TikTok. You can find our Mental Health Minute that's sponsored by LifeWord, and we have all of our weird psychology facts there. Of course, my TikTok is still up, and you can see a lot of the previous content there on TikTok at @the_doc_Brian. You can find me on Instagram as well there. And so we're pushing out content with LifeWord, and eventually we'll be posting again on my personal TikTok. But it's good to know that I'm being missed. So, Charlotte, thank you for your call.
Hi, my name is Mike Lockwood. I'm from Shepherdsville, Kentucky.
and I just had a question for you, Doc Brian. My first question is, what do you have any hobbies, and what do you like to do outside of work? And two, when you were singing in your group, how long did you sing for? And is the group still together? Thanks. I love the podcast. Have a great day. Bye.
Mike, appreciate your call. So hobbies outside of work. I don't really know what outside of work means because it feels like I work all the time. But as you mentioned, singing, I enjoy singing, enjoy music, watching movies, going to concerts, whether it be like the symphony orchestra here in Arkansas or go to see some artist somewhere. I really like to do that, to travel, to spend time with the family. I sang in a professional group for about 7 years and traveled all over the world. And two of the groups that I sang with are still together, but one of them isn't. We appreciate that you are enjoying our podcast and hope you will continue to listen. Now, I have to say that this next question does specifically say, I hope you don't play this on your podcast. However, I did get permission to go ahead and play this today.
Hi, Doc. This is Mimi from Michigan. So my question is, and hopefully you don't play this on the podcast because I don't want people to know my voice. But anyway, the question has to do with relationships. So I've had this friendship for 30 years, really good friends. We've had some good times. We've raised our children together. It's been good, but the last couple of years, I've been feeling like we're kind of fading apart. Our interests are different, and, you know, even sometimes being resentful of each other, what each other is doing. So, of course, I follow you and other people on social media and talking to friends, and just everything points to if the relationship isn't working for you, then you don't need to continue it. Find people who are like-minded, who support you, that kind of thing. So, sounds like great advice. However, if I were to tell you that this relationship is actually my marriage, and the relationship is with my husband, then it is completely different when you talk to people or read things on social media and stuff like that. People tell you, no, you must try and work this relationship out and keep it together because you made a commitment and you made a promise. And yes, I am Christian and I do believe in God and my commitment to my marriage. However, I'm feeling lost and I don't feel like it's a good situation anymore. It is not abusive. It is not hatred. There's nothing like that. I just don't feel like I am growing or learning or being complete in this relationship, and I really don't know if I want to work on it, and I don't know if he wants to work on it. So what's your advice? Why do people, I guess the question is, why do we make it so different if it's a long-term friendship versus a marriage? Is it just because of the commitment under God or not? Anyway, thank you for listening. Bye-bye.
Well, Mimi, sounds like there's a lot of things going on here. And the first thing that that I heard you say was that you have grown apart and sometimes you are resentful of each other. That speaks to an issue of your relationship being transactional. That's when resentment enters into any relationship. I did this, so I expect you to do this, or you did this, so I did this for you. That will not work in any type of relationship outside of just a business relationship where that's kind of expected. I scratch your back, you scratch mine. When we begin to keep score as to what someone does for us and what we do for them, you are always going to end up in the red. Because you value yourself more than you value anyone else, regardless of the relationship. This can be proven pretty easily within the thought or with the old adage, a penny for your thoughts. And so you're asking somebody to give your thought, their thoughts to you for a penny. But when you give your thoughts, you are giving your 2 cents. So you value yourself double what you value someone else's. So within that resentfulness, you've got to learn to make it not transactional. You either love this person and you want to be with them, and so you're willing to go through this and love them in the way that they need to be loved without worrying about it being transactional, or you're just completely checked out and not willing to work it out. And you know, it's easy to look and say, okay, I'm not getting what I need out of this, but any type of relationship takes two people to be able to work it out. And so when we look at, okay, this friendship isn't working, so we can walk away. Even if it's been 30 years, you know, I don't feel valued. I don't feel heard. I don't feel respected. It's easy for us to say, okay, we're just going to walk away. But when we put it into the category of being a marriage, there are certain commitments. I believe that in a marriage ceremony where you say your vows, that you're not actually vowing to your husband or your wife. You're making a vow to God that this is what we're going to do. In the book of Ecclesiastes, it says that it's better to not make a vow than to make a vow and not keep it. So if we look at this in the respect of that our vow is made to God and not to the other individual, then that gives us a little bit more of a stricter precedent, if you will, to make sure that we adhere to those marital vows. And so, yes, it is different. you said that there's not any abuse, there's not any infidelity. So when we look at Scripture, we know that there's no biblical grounds there for divorce, if one could argue that there were biblical grounds. So my advice to you would be this. If in hearing what I'm hearing from you, most people in this situation, and I'm not saying this is your situation, I'm saying most people in this situation have gotten to a point of where they do not have a healthy self-esteem or respect for themselves. And so I would encourage you to maybe seek a counselor, a friend who is encouraging to learn what you know to be true about yourself. As a Christian, you know that the truest thing about you is that you're a child of God. And so as you work through that and you begin the healing through that, you begin to look at the world in a different way. And so when you have this different viewpoint of your relationship because you're looking through a biblical lens and a scriptural worldview, then you begin to love without condition. And so while we may feel like we're getting the short end of the stick, our desire through Christ becomes to love them even in the midst of there not being a mutual respect or doing things together. My question to you would be, have you talked to your husband about this? Is he even aware of your true feelings? Because there are many times where we get to these positions, and we've not even talked to our spouse about what that issue may be. So I would encourage you to look at yourself, of your self-image, how you view yourself. And then if you haven't talked to your husband about these things, to make sure that you do. Make sure that you are looking at this in a way that is productive and a way that is good. and hopefully that'll make some things better. All right. Now we will go to our next caller.
Hey, Doc Brian, my name is Carol, and I love your work. But I was wondering, how do you juggle home life and work along with traveling as much as you do? Thanks. I'd love some answers. This is Carol from Chicago.
Hey, Carol, thank you for your call. the simple answer would be very carefully. we have to have balance. There has to be a work-life balance within everything that we do. How do I try to make sure that there is that balance? I have a very strict schedule to try to stick to it. Now, things happen where someone is sick or you know, some other type of occurrence comes up. But I try to make sure that I specifically schedule time that is time to be at home, time to be with my wife and my son, time to spend with family. And so as somebody who has a diagnosis of ADHD, I have to have that very structure or it just doesn't seem to really work out. Again, Carol, thank you for your call.
Hey, Doc Brian. My name's Amanda from Philadelphia. If I recall correctly, you adopted your son, Luke. What advice would you give someone who's trying to adopt a child? Thanks.
The first piece of advice that I would give to someone who is looking to adopt a child is to make sure that that's where God is leading you to do. The process is not for the faint of heart. It is very difficult. What you have to go through to be approved to adopt and then that selection process sometimes is very overwhelming. our particular adoption process was very difficult due to the PTSD that I have and just the whole thing surrounding the adoption process was very, in the best word, traumatic. And it should be easier, I would think, but I do appreciate the due diligence that the state puts into making sure that these children are placed in a safe home. And then the process, I mean, there are some people who have been open for adoption that have been on a list for 3, 5, 6, 7, 8 years. And it is daunting to think, okay, this is what God has called me to do, but it's just not taking place. I would remind you that Noah, I think it was 120 years he built the ark before the rain started coming. So we've got to stick to the task, know if God is in it, he will bring it to fruition for us. With Luke's adoption, we adopted him on a legal risk, which meant that the father had not lost his rights yet. And so there was this about 13-month time of where it was possible at any time for them to come and take Luke away from us. Then it was much different than fostering because we had a sort of guardianship over him. And thankfully, everything worked out. That didn't happen. And about 18 months after we took Luke into our home, we were able to finalize that adoption. But I would say the best piece of advice would be to make sure that this is what God has been calling you to do. All right, here's our next caller.
Yes, hi, Doc Brian. I love your show. My name is Alice. I live in Florida. You show a lot of pictures of your family on Instagram, and I am wondering, what does being a dad mean to you? Thanks.
Well, I would say being a dad means everything. You know, as a pastor, I have preached on the love of God for years, but it wasn't until I became a father that I began to realize what that really meant, that role, that love that is established there. As someone who can't have children, me nor my wife, you know, the only chance at being parents was adoption. And so it just means everything to us to be able to do that. And I'm so thankful that you look at the Instagram and you see our pictures there. And it's just great. It means everything to me. All right, this is our last caller that we'll take today. And here we go.
Hey, Doc Brian. Man, I love listening to Doc Talks. I was wondering if you remember a significant experience that impacted who you are today.
Yeah, so I think that every experience that we have leads us to the ability to grow into who we are today. I heard this analogy a couple of weeks ago, is that if you're on the top of a mountain, there's rarely any really good vegetation there because it's so rocky, but you're on the top, right? And so when you go down to the valley and you get those hard times, that's where the good fruit will grow. That's where you will find everything that you need to live is down in the valley, because there's dirt, there's water, there's all the things that is needed there. So it's in those valley experiences where we really tend to start growing. And so in those valley experiences in my life, if you've followed me for any period of time, you know that I was a police officer. I was shot in the line of duty. My partner was killed. And that experience really propelled me into an area of mental health, of so many things going on in my brain that I really didn't know what was going on. So I began to study it, which led into the psychology side of everything that takes place. And now being on the other side of that, it gives me the ability to look at mental health conditions and say, this condition does not define who I am as an individual, so that we're able to move forward and be able to see that there is hope, there is light past that part of the journey. So the specific experience that impacted who I am today would have been the trauma that I suffered as a police officer in 2003 that propelled me to where I am today. Thank you all for your call-ins. We appreciate your questions. Some questions are hard to answer. Again, you can call in at any time, leave a message, send us a text at 501-313-0833. That's 501-313-0833. Of course, you can find me and all my content at thedocbrian.com. You can find more of our Christian content here at lifeword.org. Thank you for being with us today. If you have a question, send it in. We'll do another show and answer it. Have a great day. We'll see you soon.